Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, guest host Peter LaMoth speaks with cancer survivor Mark Peel and his wife Sharon. Here's Peter.
Let's begin by learning a little bit about yourselves outside of the cancer diagnosis and experience. Sharon, why don't we start with you? Are you from Connecticut?
I was born and raised in Waterbury, Connecticut, married Mark, and we traveled to three or four different states to follow his career. I've been in education for 30 years. I've taught and I've been an administrator. We ended up overseas for 3 years, which was wonderful, a great experience for us. When we came back, we settled in Hamden, Connecticut, and I decided I didn't want the responsibility of teaching anymore, so I went into real estate. So now I work 24/7 in Central Connecticut for a family-owned real estate company and love it.
That's terrific. How about you, Mark?
I'm a New Haven boy, born and bred, and after college, I married Sharon right at the end of when we both graduated from college, and then we've as she has indicated, we've lived in a couple of different states. I have actually had two careers. So one was as an educational administrator at the university level, and after completing that, roughly 23 or so years, I went into a business, and I've been doing that for roughly the past 20 plus years. Right now, I'm semi-retired. I'm a management consultant for a bunch of small companies.
Gotcha. Great. Well, it's wonderful to have you here with us. So, Mark, you were saying earlier that before we were on the air that you've had two experiences with cancer now in a relatively short period of time. Can you take us back to 2006 and bring us up to 2011?
Okay. In the spring of 2006, out of a relatively normal routine annual physical, my primary care physician determined that that my PSA had spiked, and she referred me to another physician here, a urologist here in New Haven, and I was tested at that hospital, and subsequently I had a biopsy, and the biopsy confirmed that 6 out of 12 core samples that they took were diseased, and that kind of set in motion the whole process that Sharon and I pursued to research the disease, research all of the treatments. We consulted a number of different physicians, radiologists, urologists, surgeons, and eventually got to the point where I decided a second opinion what would be helpful, and that's what brought me to Dr. John Kohlberg at Yale New Haven, and I spent some time with him, a couple of meetings. We did another round of testing and so forth, and he put on the table all the options that I had available to me.
Gotcha. Sharon, how did you feel while this was happening and you had to make a decision with your husband about the course of treatment that he would take?
Right. Well, I went with him to all the appointments and all the consultations, just figuring that 2 years were better than one. And I took notes on everything because we found so many times you get back home and it's, what did he say? This doctor say that? Did that doctor say that? So we had pretty copious notes about what we went through. We met a couple of surgeons, a radiologist or two, and there were definitely different personalities involved. Dr. Kohlberg, that Mark finally settled on, was by far the most empathetic, sympathetic, and kind doctor in this whole series that we have met. Mark and I are pretty close. We were able to talk about everything. We were able to do research together and discuss all the options. At one point, we did go away for a week just to get away from everybody and everything, and we actually looked into cryosurgery. There was a doctor in Florida that was doing that, and we decided against it. It just seemed a little out there, for our purposes. But we came back, and Mark made the decision that he was going to go with Dr. Kohlberg and fully supported him and, you know, was there through the whole thing with him. And
that's great.
Yeah.
Great. So, Mark, tell us about that experience, if you will, you know, what Dr. Kohlberg did for you and the outcome.
Well, even in our first meeting, he seemed to be very inquisitive about my own feelings and approach to having the disease. At that point, it was confirmed that I had the prostate cancer. He definitely did not rush me into a judgment. He's a classically trained surgeon, and that was his specialty for a number of years, I guess, even at Yale, but prior to Yale. And yet never got the sense that he was trying to sell me on the surgical solution, on the surgical treatment. Some of the previous physicians I had consulted with seemed to be expressing their own, you know, medical bias, and you know, gently coaxing me towards that bias as the treatment of choice. I wasn't terribly convinced of that. As Sharon indicated, a lot of research on the internet, and it's really funny the way we went away for a week, and just chewed this thing up and went over all the options and so forth. Came back from that. Dr. Kohlberg was in surgery when I called, and that was on a Friday. And on a Saturday morning, at 8 o'clock in the morning, I had this mysterious call on my cell. I had no idea who was calling me at 8 o'clock Saturday morning, and it was Dr. Kohlberg. And that was perhaps the ultimate convincing moment for me at that time.
That kind of told you the type of attention and care you were going to receive.
Yeah, very much so. He just answered a few questions for me at that time, and I spontaneously said, would you do my surgery? And he said, of course.
That's terrific. Thank you for sharing that with us. Sharon, from your perspective, you're participating in this with your husband, and you're taking a very methodical approach together. But surely there were concerns and questions in your mind, perhaps that you may have been keeping to yourself. Did you get support or validation from anyone that you knew who had had a similar experience or was knowledgeable in this area that could put your mind at ease?
Unfortunately, there were not too many people that I knew that had gone through this, you know, as wives or girlfriends or moms. I did find one colleague whose husband had recently gone through it, a little bit of a different situation because he was a bit older, but she was wonderful in answering any of my questions and there for me if I needed her. Other people that I talked to were both surprised that Mark had this because he seemed so much younger than people that normally get prostate cancer. But we're a strong family and don't have any trouble reaching out to people if we need to. So, I mean, I certainly had friends that were there for me, you know, with a shoulder to cry on or a pat on the back if I needed it. But basically, we were pretty strong just with ourselves.
Gotcha. So I think it's good that you were in the right frame of mind at this particular time, because there were three other people you had to tell about your Mark's cancer diagnosis. I should say your cancer diagnosis, because really you go through this together. And that's your three daughters. So Sharon, would you like to comment on that? Because I recall Mark telling me earlier it was difficult for him to have that conversation with them.
It was, but like I said, we've got the three daughters, and we try to raise them to be very strong and independent individuals and to be able to land on their own two feet no matter what the situation. So I didn't worry about telling them that was not a problem. It was more what their reaction would be. Our youngest was overseas, and I knew she would worry because she couldn't see Mark, you know, so we had to be sure that she knew that he was going to be all right. My older and middle daughter, the older was very independent. The middle daughter is probably the most emotional of the three, probably the closest to me in that, you know, I talked to her three or four times a day, every day. So we did tell them all, and once I told them, Mark got on the phone to reassure them that he was indeed okay. They could come home. We didn't need them there to do anything for us. although my youngest one did come back and came to the hospital the day that Mark had surgery, spent the day in the in the room with me there waiting for him. But no, they were all fine, and once I talked to Mark and realized he was going to be okay, mm-hmm. and it wasn't basically a life-changing illness. He was still going to go to work. He was still going to be dad. He was still going to function as he always did. So they were all okay with it.
So it sounds like you had a strong support group of friends and family and neighbors going into this. So Mark, as you went through both of these, what was the effect of the treatment on you, either physically, emotionally, that you could share with us?
Well, I think you're making reference to the reoccurrence as well.
Yes.
About 4 years after my surgery, I received a PSA result that indicated that that I had some reoccurrence. It wasn't a definitive indication, but my understanding is that in the absence of my prostate, a PSA of anything of note would indicate the presence of some disease. At that point, I was Smilo Cancer Center had just opened up, and Dr. Kohlberg is part of a team with Dr. Peschel, who's a radiologist, and I they both saw me and came up with a treatment plan that included hormone therapy and radiation, which is Dr. Peschel's specialty. So I've had the robotic, da Vinci robotic surgery, and then 4 years later, I went through a series of 39 radiation treatments, along with the hormone therapy. The robotic surgery was one of the truly miraculous experiences in my medical life. I've been fairly strong and healthy all my life, with the exception of an episode with some kidney stones a bunch of years ago. So I think at 60 years of age, when I came down with the disease, I was in fairly good shape to for the surgery. The robotic surgery was almost a non-event, if I can say that. I was back to work in 3 days, mm-hmm. out of the hospital. 3 days back to work. It was really I'm not going to say a wonderful experience, but it was a. Under the circumstances, I expected a lot worse, and it just simply wasn't. It wasn't.
So what were you thinking then the second time when you were diagnosed?
Well, that was a great disappointment to come up with it because, we had bought into the robotic surgery as the gold standard, that would take care of it once and for all. And because some of the tests that I had taken indicated that my disease was encapsulated. It had not gone beyond the prostate itself. And so the reoccurrence was a bit of a good bit of a letdown. But yet at the same time, Dr. Kohlberg and Dr. Peschel reassured us that, that the next level of treatment, the hormone therapy and the radiation, were suitable, very effective treatments for this disease. I appeared to be in a 10% category where similar situations with other people, giving up their prostate through surgery, there is a reoccurrence. In some 10% of the cases, and I just happened to fall in that category. So we became very positive very quickly to use the therapies that were being recommended to get underway with that.
Terrific. Well, positivity is a great note to end the first half of our conversation on. We're going to take a short break now for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to hear more about Mark and Sharon's experience with cancer.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there's new hope. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Peter Lamoth, and I'm joined today by my guests Mark and Sharon, who are sharing their story of survivorship with us. Mark and Sharon, we all know, whether it's a celebrity survivor of cancer or your average person who survived this disease, they have their tales about the impact on their life that this this trauma, this experience has. It often comes after some hindsight thought. Could you tell us a little bit about how this affected your lives over the course of those 4 or 5 years, but also as you sort of look forward?
Well, I think the occurrence of the disease had a very, very significant effect on how Sharon and I rebalanced. And that's the key word there, I think. Rebalanced our commitment of time and our priorities. To be faced with the challenge of having to deal with the big C, cancer, is somewhat daunting. And we took a very aggressive philosophical approach to this, and that included not only dealing with the treatment, the most ambitious treatment, the surgery, but in looking at how we've been spending our time. I'm a Type A personality, and work has always been a major part of my daily routine, probably to an excess. At 60 years of age, when I got the diagnosis, it just set us back, and it set us back in the sense that we needed to step back from a lot of years, decades of our routine, and we did that. We got out of town. We started to talk about things that we haven't talked about in a long time, and so we needed to involve more of our personal lives. Our friends, our family, spending more time with the family, and we made a slow adjustment to do so, a commitment to do so.
Sharon, what's your perspective on that?
All of the above. And one of the things that we did try to do more of, which we always wanted to, was travel. Rather than talk about it, well, in 5 years we'll go to Italy, or in 2 years we'll do this or that, we bought a timeshare at Cape Cod. So we were sure that we'd get away there at least 1 week out of the year, and any of our friends or family could come with us. So we've done that since 2006, and we've tried to take at least one major trip a year. This past year, we went to Israel. My daughter got married there, so we did go over for the wedding. Before that, when my youngest was in the UAE, she was living in Abu Dhabi. We had never lived there, so we went to see her there. Whether it be friends, we've visited friends on the West Coast. We hadn't seen them in a while, but just try to make more plans to see more people that were close to us and spend more time with friends and family that were important to us.
Gotcha. That's great. I think everyone's experience to cancer is different. Some people take your rebalancing approach. Others take this approach that they have to hurry up and get as much done as they can, because they don't know what the future doesn't seem as certain as it used to. And I think those are all good, and it's all dependent upon the individual. I think in terms of a couple or spouses, that you both chose the same way to respond is good, because that's not always the case, and it can be very problematic in relationships. But it doesn't seem sure. like that was the case with you all.
Right.
So besides traveling and the timeshare, what about the day-to-day? Do you have new routines? Do you have new traditions that you're starting? Do you have grandchildren? What's occupying your time that's bringing a smile to your face every day, besides each other?
Funny you should ask about grandchildren. We just had our first 7 weeks ago.
Oh, terrific.
And she lives in New Jersey, so that's been a major part of our life, just in the past few months. But for Mark, he's working, going into the office half days rather than full days now, so we always have afternoons. My real estate has slowed down a little bit. I'm not working full days anymore. I mean, I will if I have to, but usually we're both home in the afternoon. And whether it's watch a program together or read a book or just relax at home, cook a meal, you know, spend time together, we have that now where we didn't before.
Right. And it sounds like you're not sweating the small stuff anymore.
No.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, the small stuff just doesn't count for much.
I think it would be good to hear from you, Mark, as the patient. What advice you would have for men like yourself or men in general who are facing a prostate cancer diagnosis or any cancer diagnosis?
Well, I think, as I said previously, I think doing the research is not just something that I felt necessary. I think everybody facing this needs to do that because there is no one perfect solution to this disease, and there are several, you know, valid proven treatments, you know, involving radiation as opposed to surgery and so forth. It's generally a very slow moving disease, so you don't have to make a lot of decisions so quickly. In our case, we decided very early on to be very aggressive about dealing with the treatments, and so we chose the surgical option primarily because of my age. I was 60 years old and in good shape to tolerate surgery, which I found was hardly surgery at all, given the Da Vinci robot treatment. But I would strongly encourage second opinions. I'm a believer in that in general, but in my case, it meant everything. It meant that I didn't have to settle for the first round of medical opinions I received and all the consultations we did, some of which were not that comforting. You know, they tended to paint probably the darker side of this disease, involving impotence and involving incontinence, you know, those being the major negative outcomes of the disease and dealing with the disease and the treatments for the disease. So second opinions, I think I would strongly recommend in every case. Being positive is just an incredible, it's part of, I think, the best way to approach this type of disease, perhaps all diseases, but a good frame of mind, you know, about the options, about the outcomes, and about just dealing with challenge, you know, the medical challenge that you're facing. You just have to move on. You have to, you know, identify it, see it for what it is, and that's so powerful in terms of. In terms of how other people will relate to you.
Did you take any inspiration from other survivors, people in your life, or people's stories that you were aware of?
This is going to sound a little odd. About 40 years ago, I read a book by Norman Cousins, and it was titled Anatomy of an Illness. And he had been facing a fatal illness at the time. He was an author, and not a medical person, and he determined that after all of the tests and all of the treatments and so forth that he had undergone with the best of medical science at the time, dealing with the situation, that humor was perhaps one of the best, most positive things that he could immerse himself in order to get better. And that's what this book, and I remember this book, and it was a powerful determinant in how I approached.
Did you pick it up a second time?
No.
No?
No, I didn't. Instead, I started a diary.
Oh. Tell us about that.
Well, I started logging all of our meetings, all of our consultations, all of... some points of research and so forth, and doing it in a humorous way. You know, I would make humorous comments.
Share one with us.
Well, if you go to enough physicians' offices for your consultations, you know, you start to get hooked on the reading material. And I was looking forward to some of these consultations because it was the only way I could keep up with Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and what was going on in their lives. Not that that was terribly important to me, but I like the New Yorker, and I don't have a subscription to the New Yorker, and things like I got involved in catching up with my physician office reading.
Gotcha.
So that's just one outcome of the thing.
Sharon, I'd like to ask you the next question, which is, after a cancer diagnosis, everyone is focused on the patient, and I think. I think not enough focus is given to the spouse or the primary caregiver, mm-hmm. Because they are thrust into a position for which they have little training other than the relationship that they have with right. the individual. And they can often feel overwhelmed by all that they have to do, doctor visits, prescriptions, meals, exercise, keeping in contact with friends and neighbors and being the spokesperson for the
right,
for the
right.
patient if that's what's necessary. And that's why I think spouses and primary caregivers and the extended network of people around a patient are survivors too. And that's why I refer to it as your cancer experience
right.
and gestured to both of you. Tell us a little bit about what you think are some of the things that a newly diagnosed couple has to think about in the first few weeks following that diagnosis that they should be aware of that may hit them over the head or pull the rug out from under them.
Okay. One of the things I would suggest is reaching out to people that you're close to that may want to help, that may give offers of help, and to accept it. Mark and I have always been self-sufficient, and I mean, anyone that knows me will tell you that I'm not afraid to speak my mind. You know, I've got an opinion on everything, and I'll tell you if you want to hear it. But we've got some very, very good friends that go back to when Mark was in fifth grade, you know, boyhood buddies of his that I've known now for my entire life just about. And when we told them they wanted to help, and it's like, oh, you don't have to. But they really did want to help, and they felt closer to both of us by us allowing them to do something for us, even if it was to drive Mark to an appointment or to cook dinner for us one night. So I would say reach out to people, and if they want to help, let them. You can choose how much you want to let them do or whatever, but it's a bonding experience. You don't know when they're going to need the same thing from you. And it worked for us. I mean, it brought us closer to those people that have always been in our lives, but now they were closer in our lives. And, you know, it's been wonderful.
So don't be afraid to ask
exactly.
how you can help. And if you're the caregiver or the patient, don't be afraid to take the help.
Right.
Don't shrug it off and say, I'll be okay, we'll be fine.
Exactly.
Because there will probably be enough people, as you may have experienced and others have, that keep their distance from you when you're ill for fear.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And if they say they want to help and don't mean it, well, shame on them.
That's even worse. It's even worse, I think, to offer your help and not follow through. So I think we have a few minutes left, and there was one thing I wanted to come back to that we had discussed while we were off the air, and that has to do with hot flashes. So I'm going to just put that out there, and one or both of you can respond to that.
Maybe I should set it up.
We have 1 minute,
okay.
By the way.
My hormone therapy involved two shots of hormones in order to be in partnership with the radiation. And after the first couple of weeks after the first shot, the hot flashes kicked in. Sharon.
What is ironic about that whole thing is that I went totally through menopause and never, ever had a hot flash. So for all the women in the world, to see a man having a hot flash, it was a joyous thing.
Mark Peel and his wife Sharon are cancer survivors. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.